Lord this evening to 2 Corinthians. Excuse me, 1 Corinthians chapter 16. It's almost in the 2 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Don't always just straight away announce the title, but I will tonight. We're just going to simply think for a little while this evening about what it means to be a man. Having this day set aside to mark Father's Day, or to celebrate fathers in our society, which is a good and a noble, and I believe a God-honoring thing, of course, to do, made me to stop and think about what it really means to be a man. And by no means do I have the market cornered on that. You put in the unique position when you're called to preach with authority on things that you yourself don't yet fully have understood or mastered. And so it is that we want to consider that tonight, and that is a subject that may ruffle feathers and those kinds of things, especially with others in the world. So I thought we'd start with a little bit of a joke. I don't usually do that either, but I heard a joke this week, thought it was pretty funny. Why did God create Eve after Adam and really after the rest of creation? You ever notice that one of the last things he did in that creation week was to make Eve? And the response to that is because he didn't want Eve's opinion on how to do it right. So I thought that was pretty funny when I heard it, but certainly we know that wouldn't have been the case. But read with me here, 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse number 13. Watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, be strong. Let all your things be done with charity. I beseech you, brethren, ye know the house of Stephanas, that it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry of the saints, that ye submit yourselves unto such, and to everyone that helpeth with us and laboreth. In verse number 13, as Paul concludes this first letter, he speaks directly to the men. And basically what he tells them to do is act like men. He tells them to be godly men. We live in a day and in a time where the world is increasingly dominated by women. And you all know that I love and adore godly women as much as biblically allowed and is right. You know what the Bible teaches about the order of the sexes. But as we notice and as we look at our society, we are living more and more with every passing year in a female-dominated society. And that has been going on for quite some time. The feminist movement began decades ago, and it still rages today. It still rages today, and they cry about the injustices, and they've succeeded really in upending God's order for society. And that's not necessarily the fault of the women, but more so it has been the fault of the men of this nation that have allowed it to transpire and take place. In fact, I believe that we're in such a position right now in our country where the lines are so blurred between what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman, and it doesn't really matter. You can be either, you can be both, you can be neither, all of those things. I mean, that's what their end game has been. And we have gotten to that place largely, I think, because men have stopped being men over the course of time. And in the absence of leadership, in the absence of men being men, women will rise and take control. They will step into that place. Sometimes because in that vacuum where there is no leader, there must be one for there to be some order or for some help. And so a lot of this does lay at the doorstep of men. But what has happened is that the way our society has worked, the way our country has been these last couple of generations, it's had a profound impact upon the boys that have turned into of age adults, and have entered into manhood. It's had a profound impact because they've been raised without the ability to even understand what being a man is all about. Without the ability to really have a good example before them in society. It has had a profound impact upon many. It has led to an extreme perverting of what it means to be a man. These boys that have been raised without a real understanding are coming of age. They're going out into the world. They're taking jobs. They are having families. And in most cases, the society that we find ourselves in today is as it is because those boys never really turned into men. Those boys never really understood or had a good example of what it means to be a man, to what it means to feel like or to act like, what a godly man would care about or how he would act, what would be important to him, all those kinds of things. And we can see over the course of time how Satan has been working to feminize not only the world, not only to rise up women, but the effect it has had on men is that largely they have been turned into or have been feminized themselves. We have far too many men today that are feminine. And I don't mean they display qualities of love or care. A godly man does that. But I mean they have quit being what God calls men to be. And they are more interested in having the qualities or acting like what God says women should be like. And we have a great role reversal. We have a great mix-up. We have a great mess within the roles that God has designed for society. What our world needs more than anything is men to be men. I mean, let's be honest. That's what the world needs. And I don't mean men of the world that are only out to gain sow their wild oats and have their pleasures. Some are addicted to that. That's not what being a man is about. Not serving his own pleasures or not, you know, having his own name and lights and those. That's not what being a man is about. But the Bible tells us about what being a man is. It is our best defense today, I believe, against the homosexual movement. It is our best defense today against the transgender movement. It's our best defense today against all of the mess that is going on in society. If men had been men for these last 30 or 40 years, we wouldn't have to discuss who's using what bathroom and what constitutes a man or a woman if they decide to be one or the other. We wouldn't have all of that going on if men would simply be men. So the question remains, what does it mean to be a man? I mean, really, what does it constitute? What does it mean to be a man? What does godly manhood look like? I believe if you were able to go back and look at godly men like Daniel, like David, if you were able to look at godly men like Joseph, you would have had a great example, and you wouldn't have had to have any guess about who they were, male or female. You wouldn't have had to have any wonder about what they were about. They were men. Did that mean that any of them could have benched 500 pounds? No, not necessarily. That's not what it means to be a man. Does it mean that they could have, you know, done any of the other stereotypes that the world might throw out there? That's not what being a man's about. But they were able to do the things that we're going to look at here tonight. And in doing them, they become or they display what being a man is all about. And I think in society and as families, as fathers, we're much too easy maybe upon our boys as we raise them. For far too long, we have had in mind that a certain age makes a boy a man. That when he turns a certain age, that because in the eyes of the law, he can answer for himself, therefore he's a man. But that's not it at all. That's not it at all. In fact, when you look at how they mature and develop and all those things, it may be many years after that. Some boys never turn into men as far as reality goes, as Scripture is concerned. I mean, when you raise kids, they're all focused on the next age, getting to this next age and what it means. And and having a little more freedom or having a little more responsibility or staying up late or whatever it is. They think of that magical age of 18 or 21 and they think, oh, if I can just get to that, I'll be a man. But I've told my boys, I said, you'll be a man when I tell you you're a man. When you act like a man, when you do the things that the Bible says that you are to do. And so we need to focus on that within our family. We need to display before them what being a godly man is about and teach them that. And women, you can have a great impact upon the men in your life to encourage them to be the man that they can and should be for the Lord. Your boys, as they are raised to be men, and certainly we should be thankful for them. We have far too many men that try to be feminine, and I don't mean they go around wearing dresses and all that, but I mean that they are simply, you know, they're simply just there. You know, they go where they're pointed, they do what they're told, and that's just about all that they do. I mean, they don't rise up and act like a man. Now here in this verse, he tells them in verse number 13, watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men. Now the word quit here takes some study to understand. Because it's not saying quit or finish or stop. It's not saying, you know, like we would tell our kids, quit that. You're being too loud. Quit that. That's dangerous. Meaning cease or stop the activity. That's not what this word meant when it was translated or put into our language. What it means here is to carry through, to discharge or perform completely, to be blameless. In other words, and we don't use it this way anymore, but back in when the Bible was translated in English and that, it would be popular for someone to talk about or to say, I'm going to quit this job. And it didn't mean they were going to stop and not do it anymore, but it meant they were going to see it through. It meant that they were going to not stop until it was done. They were going to discharge that responsibility appropriately and faithfully. So that's what he means here when he says, quit you like men. It means to carry out the office, the calling, the responsibilities of being a man that we've been called to be. So what does it mean to be a man tonight? Turn with me to 1 Timothy chapter 2. We've got five things we want to run through tonight. And these are just five things the Lord laid upon our hearts to consider what being a man is all about. By no means, as we said, do I have the market cornered on this. We have much growth yet within us, much things yet to learn. But one thing I've learned is that I don't want to be a man like men of society. I don't want to be like those examples that you see so often in the workplace or, you know, when you watch the news or TV. I don't want to be what the world thinks of as a man. You know, the father is often made fun of when you see stories or you know, watch TV. Years and years ago, you know, there was that show on TV called Father Knows Best. And that's not the case anymore. They don't put stuff on TV like that. They make fun of fathers, make them look like they don't know anything. They make men look like they don't know anything, can't do anything, can't survive without someone to help, without someone to take care and point them in the right direction and all that kind of stuff. But that's not what being a man is all about. So what does it mean to be a man? First of all, to be a man means that we are to be leaders. Plain and simple. If there is a breakdown in leadership in our home, in our society, then it's the fault of the men that there is a breakdown in leadership. We must see the need as men to lead. God has created us for that purpose. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 12, it says, but I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. For Adam was first formed, then Eve. He says very plainly here in verse 13, there was an order to creation of man and woman. He said that order was for a purpose because the man is to be in the lead. And don't make apology. I am so tired of people making apology for that today. It doesn't mean that we think that women are inferior. In fact, there are a lot of things that women are better at than men. God designed them that way. God designed you that way. It doesn't mean that they are inferior. It doesn't mean that they are second class. It doesn't mean that you all are somehow missing something because you have someone that leads you. Not at all. God created man and He put them in the role of leadership. He created Adam first. He put all things within His hand. Adam named all the animals that came to him. God said unto Adam, here's the earth, have dominion over it. Dress the garden, do the work. Then of course He gave him Eve to be a helpmeet. There is an order to creation. There is an order to the sexes. And to be a man, you have to be a leader. There's just no way around it. You have to be a leader. Being a leader means that you make decisions to guide your family, to guide whoever it is that you're desiring to lead. You make decisions with that in mind. That means that you pray. That means that you seek. That means that you look for the right answer and the right direction. And it's an enormous responsibility. Because what if you're wrong? What if you make the wrong decision? What if you point your family, your kids, or in the wrong direction? It's an enormous responsibility. And so it paralyzes some men, and they think, well, that's just too much. I just want to follow. I just want to be kind of in the background. Let my wife be the leader. Let her take care of all of those things. If you're one of those men tonight and doing that, I'm telling you, you're wrong, and you're not being a man as God says and the Bible says that we are to be and to do. Be a leader. Don't be a follower. Because as we said at the beginning, in the absence of leadership, there will be someone to rise up and lead your family or lead your church. And so we need to see that today. So few males are interested in leading today. They're so sidetracked with the things that they want to do and all the other stuff. So few are interested in leadership. They don't want it. The society we live in, our country, our culture is starving for godly leaders. They're starving for someone to stand up and say, follow me, and have them expect to follow. I mean, really. I mean, our politicians are such a joke. They're not leaders. I mean, all they do is try to promise you all the right things to get you to kind of do what they want you to do. That's get them into office, and then they don't care. They don't care afterwards. They're not leaders. But that's not what it's about. We must lead. As we said, Eve was not inferior. She was just second. She was just created second. God put her in a position. And we need to recognize that today and not make excuse for it. As men, we need to embrace leadership. We need to actively lead in our church. As it points out here in verse number 12, I suffer not a woman to teach, not because she can't. Many women can, and they do teach our children. Many women could teach an adult Sunday school class and do it well. Many women could stand in the pulpit and preach, and as far as the physical delivery and all of those things, do it well. They know enough. It's not a case of them not being able to lead within the church. It's a case of not being qualified. Because God said men are to lead. In the absence of leadership, women will take that role because they will not allow things to fall apart and disintegrate around them. They will. And so we must take control. We must take leadership in the church. What does that mean? It means that we are actively seeking as men within the roles that God has given us as men in the church. We are actively seeking to lead our church in the proper direction. Having that responsibility on us, pastor will stand and give an account for the entire church. And as the men have their place in the church and their different functions and roles, they will give an account for the leadership that they have provided within the church, more so and above than any woman would give an account for to God. And you need to embrace that. You need to actively embrace that and be a leader. Don't be afraid to be that leader in church. Be the leader at home. I have heard much more preaching over the course of my life on submission than I have on leadership. Really, I have. And in a sense, it's not easy to preach on submission because, let's face it, the flesh doesn't like it. And submission applies more than to just women. I always try to point that out. But when we talk about it, that's what is thought. And so it's hard on the flesh, but it's easy in the sense that when there's a problem in the home, we go, well, she's not in submission. That's the problem. But I would submit to you tonight and say that submission is not the greatest problem that our homes face. It really isn't. How can a woman be in submission if there's no leadership? How can she follow if there is no one to lead? How can she be what she's supposed to be if I'm not being the man, if I'm not providing leadership for my home? A woman can only submit if she is being led. Go back to 1 Corinthians 16 again. Of course, he tells them in verse 13 to be men. But notice in verse number 15, he talks about a man by the name of Stephanas. And just notice the way that he references this man. He says in verse number 15, I beseech you, brethren, ye know the house of Stephanas. I mean, just think about that phrase, the house of. He didn't use his wife's name. He didn't use his children's name. But he said, the house of Stephanas. You see here that men are to be the leaders in their home. They are to be the ones to point in the right direction, to make decisions, of course, with all the help and with all of the grace, with all of the strength that a godly wife can provide to him, because he can't do it on his own. Cannot. My wife makes me a better leader than I could ever be on my own or without her support. Much better. I could not do it without her help, without her support. And it is something that must be. It is our house. What did Joshua say? As for me and my house. He didn't say as for me and my wife's house. He said, as for me and my house, this is what we will do. Joshua was a man. He was a man, and he said, this is what we will do. And you know what? When Joshua said that, not only to Israel, but first to his wife and to his children, Joshua expected to be followed. A lot of times, the way we view men in society today, the way we view the father, it's a joke. You know, they make the joke, well, dad's only in charge when mom's away, the kids are gone, and the cat's asleep. I mean, you know, that's the kind of thinking of how society operates or thinks about men today. But I don't want to be that kind of man. That's not going to better my house. That's not going to teach my children. That's not going to glorify God. And I would encourage each of you to consider what being a leader means within our home. Not only in church at home, but out in the world. We need to be leaders. We need to be leaders. You know, we don't need to be mean to women that have gotten into politics and that do all of those things. We don't need to, rail against them to the point of hatred. But I tell you what, it's not their place. It's the place of a man to be the leader. And we need to do that. I'm not saying you need to go down and get into politics. My point is that we need to show forth that leadership even in the world as an example for others to see. That they would rejoice or that they would glorify God. This means doing what God leads us to do no matter how others feel about it. And that's hard. One of the hardest parts about being a man is doing what God expects and has led you to do when nobody else understands it. When nobody else gets it. When nobody else says, yeah, I can see how that would benefit the family. I can see how that would benefit the church. I can see how that would be the right thing to do. When God is leading you as a man to do, you must do, regardless. And so, to be a man is not to take the temperature of those around you and do whatever is best. We talked about that some time ago. That's not leadership. That's not leadership. We need to be leaders if we are to be a man. And I think every one of us tonight, myself included, we can all be better leaders. We all can point our families in the right direction. We all can do a better job at providing a good example in so many ways. Turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 5. The second thing that being a man means, and this isn't popular either, not only does it mean to be a leader, but being a man means that you're a provider. You're a provider. Women are capable today to earn as much as men. That's the reality. They're capable to earn more. They're capable to be successful. Certainly they are. And I don't look down my nose at women that go out and work. I mean, if they don't have children at home and all those kinds of things, I don't know that the Bible tells them that they can't. The first place is to be a helpmeet to their husband. If they can do that and work, their husband is supportive, then do it. That's the reality. Where children are involved, I think it's a little more clear, but the problem today isn't with women working, isn't with a wife having a job. Again, it gets turned around. The problem is with the man believing that she needs to pull her own weight. The problem is with the man thinking, well, she needs to go to work and work. I need her to work 20 hours a week so that we can afford this and do that. That's not the place. There may be a time in our life through whatever circumstance may befall us that may be the reality. That my wife may have to do that for some reason. But being a man means that I'm the provider for my family. It means that I have the responsibility to see that they have everything that they need. And I know that all of that is a gift from God and He gives us that. I get that. But it's my responsibility. If there is something that lacks within my family, it's my fault. It's my responsibility to see that that need is met, to do whatever is needed to bring that to pass. To be a man, you must provide for your house. Otherwise, you're just a male. No better than a boy. You know, a boy, as he lives at home and as he grows, you know, he enjoys being fed by mom and dad. He enjoys being clothed by mom and dad, sheltered by mom and dad. He enjoys all of those things. But there comes a time when he must provide those things for himself to be a man. So that one day he can provide them for his family, if God would so bless him. And in doing that, many people, many men, or males maybe we should say, they never reach that point. They never see that need. And so they just kind of want to live off of, you know, their wife if they can. They kind of want to skate by without having to work too hard. But that's not what being a man is about. First Timothy chapter number 5. Verse 8, but if any provide not for his own, and there again you see the leadership aspect, his. God has given me a wife, He's given me children, He's given me a house, they're mine. And I had better make sure that they're provided for. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith, and is worse than an infidel. A man that does not provide for his own is not a man at all. He is a detriment to his faith, a detriment to a reproach upon Christ, because he sees not that need. Provision for family is upon our shoulders. Too many expect to be provided for without working. 2 Thessalonians says that if you don't work, you shouldn't eat. If you don't provide for your own house, you shouldn't eat. You shouldn't have anything yourself. And that means doing whatever they can do. Whatever they need to do. That means working overtime. That means working two jobs if you have to. That means doing whatever is necessary to make sure that they have everything that they need. Again, whether a wife works or not is really not the issue. That's another thought, another message. But it's all about whether the man sees his responsibility to provide. And most people, they start a list and they put money and financial obligations at the top, and that's fine, and we've referenced that. But the first provision you need to make for your house is a spiritual consideration. You had better provide for your house spiritually. You had better provide for them in such a manner that you point them to Christ, that you lead them to Christ. That you're always fostering an atmosphere in your family where they can grow, where they can become more like Christ, where they can have a better relationship with Christ. Making sure that they are always working in that direction. It's my duty to be the spiritual provider for my house. Does my wife help me with that? Sure she does. Sure she does. She does so in a great way. As she spends more time with the children than I do, she is able to have an influence on them. She is able to have Bible time with them when I'm not around. She's able to do that, and she does. But it's my duty to make sure that provision is taking place, that is happening. Of course, money, food, material, comfort, shelter, clothes, emotional needs. There's a big one. Got to make sure that your home is cared for emotionally. Many men, we are so opposite from women in the emotional aspect that we just kind of write it all off and we kind of think, that's your problem, take care of it. It'll come and go, you know, just wait a few minutes, you'll be happy again. That's kind of how we think about it sometimes. But you know what? It's my duty to provide for the emotional needs of my house, to make sure they have what they need. You're not a man if you don't provide for your own in these things. And there are plenty of examples today of men that are living off the government, men that are skating by on welfare, men that are not men at all because they don't see this need. Their families are struggling, they're suffering. Their wives are having to pick up the slack and do all the work because dad is not in the picture. He's absentee and he's not really a man. To be a man, you got to be a provider. Be a good provider in everything that means to your family. And don't make him, so that's not a man. You know, some people think that being a man means ruling your house with fear, ruling your house with, you know, only giving your wife or children a little bit of what they need so that they can get by and depend on. Yes, not what it's about. You need to provide for them the things that they need. Not only is a man to be a leader and a provider, but he's to be a lover. Go back to 1 Corinthians 16. This may sound odd because we're not of the fairer sex. Women have a much easier time at displaying love, care, emotion, compassion. God gave them that ability. We find that through and through in Scripture. But we are to discharge our office of manhood with love. We're to be a lover. 1 Corinthians chapter number 16 here, we read verse 13, of course, where he says, be men, quit you like men, be strong. And then verse 14, he says, let all your things be done with charity. He says, let everything you do, everything you're about be done with love. To be a man, you have to be a lover. You need to be a lover of Jesus, first and foremost. There's no replacement for that in being a man. There's no replacement for that. Love Jesus, serve Jesus, give your all to Jesus. We must see that our devotion to Him benefits all of those around us. Be a lover of Christ. Be a lover to your wife. Be a lover to your wife. Don't give yourself to another. That's not what being a man is about. Being a man is not about sex. It isn't. It's not about gratification. It's not about fleshly play. It's not about those things. It's about being a lover to one woman for the entirety of your life. That's what being a man is about. You want to be a boy, just go through life and fulfill all of your, you know, one woman to the next and sow your wild oats and do all that kind of thing. You're not a man. Being a man means loving the wife of your youth, committing yourself to her, loving her with everything you've got, and giving yourself completely and entirely to her and to her alone. Don't give yourself to another, not even a little bit. My wife has the right to demand everything of me. My time, my attention, all of those things from me, and I don't have the right to give them to another. Don't mess around with that. Being a man means that we keep ourselves pure and above reproach. That we do not mess around with anyone else that's not our wives. And I, you know, not even a little bit. Not even just a little bit of flirting, or not even just a little bit of games or thinking or whatever. Not even a little bit. Be a lover of your wife. That's what it takes to be a man. Being committed to her the entirety of your life. That's the vow that you made. Be a man. Live up to your word. And I believe that that will teach your kids much more by them watching how you love your wife than you could ever sit them down and lecture them about. They see the way that you care for her, that you tenderly treat her, that you make her the queen of your life and provide for her and love her and treat her kindly. They see so much, and that teaches them so much. You want your wife, or you want your sons to be good husbands. You want your sons to treat their wives well. You want your sons to have a right understanding of what women are in life. Then treat your wife well. Be her lover. And your kids will learn much. Not only your boys, but your girls will have an example. Have an example of what they need to have in a husband. Be a lover of your kids. Perhaps not all kids, but at least your own. You know, sometimes people think, well, you got 6 kids, you got 8 kids, you must love kids. Well, I love my kids, you know, and all the kids that we have here, the church, but kids throwing a tantrum out in the grocery store, man, it's hard. I mean, that's difficult. But be a lover of your kids. That's what it takes to be a man. Don't ignore them. Don't put them off. Don't think that they're not worth it. Don't, write them off or anything like that. Spend time with them. Love them. Show them that by your attention, by your care. Even if the things that they have to talk to you about don't mean anything. And even if they are dumb, so to speak. But show them that love and that care. Be willing to be a giver of your time and love your kids. And a man must be also a lover of life. He has to be a lover of life. See the importance of life. Understand it's a gift from God. It's sanctity. Be willing to protect it. And that takes us to number 4. A man must also be a fighter. He must be a lover in these ways, but he must also be a fighter. It balances out. Go to Nehemiah chapter number 4. He needs to be a fighter. We have far too many men that have become effeminate in that they're not willing to fight today. I'm not talking about brawling in the streets and joining the wrestling federations or cage fighting and whatever else. That's not what I'm talking about. That's not what being a man is about. Being a man is having the ability to fight, having the ability to protect, having the ability to do whatever's necessary to protect your family, but to be restrained by love and show compassion and mercy. That's what being a man is about. We have to protect. We have to be a fighter as it is appropriate in our lives. Nehemiah chapter number 4, it was sometime about this time last year, we talked about self-defense in the Bible and those kinds of things. And these verses really spoke to us concerning what it meant in that capacity to be, to be a man and to protect ourselves and to value life and all of those kinds of things. Nehemiah chapter 4, it seems to have vanished from my Bible. It's just like gone altogether. Nehemiah chapter number 4, read verse 14, we get there, talks about fighting for, there it is, right where I left it. Nehemiah chapter 4, talks about loving, talks about fighting. Verse 14, Nehemiah chapter, let me make sure I got the right verse now since it took me a few minutes to find it. Chapter 4, verse number 14, and I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of ye of the people, be ye not afraid of them, remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses. We have biblical instruction here that being a man means that we must be a fighter. That doesn't mean that we're prone to violence. It doesn't mean that we're prone to lose our temper or to be unduly angry. But what it means is that we're willing to draw a line in the sand and say, that far and no farther. I will protect. I will do everything that I can to stand for my house, to do what is necessary to protect them. God has given us such a great gift with our wives and our children and our homes. And they are ours to protect. And we must stand and fight. We have such a victim mentality today to give the bully anything that he wants, to lay down and be the victim. And we translate that over, I think, spiritually. And we are unwilling at times to stand and fight Satan, stand and fight the spiritual battles that have to be fought in our homes because it's hard. We're fighting against Satan, but Satan is working through our children and through the things that they see and the things that they want to do and the things that they want to be involved in or whatever else is invading our home. And Satan is behind it. But the ones that you have to stand against sometimes are the very ones that you love and are trying to protect by telling them no, by setting a good example, by presenting to them, hey, this isn't the right thing we need to do right now. You need to be willing to draw the line in the sand and say, you can do this, but that's it. No further. And you've got to be willing to fight to protect that line. Spiritually, I'm talking about. Against Satan. As he manipulates, as he works in the forces of the world to creep into your home, you've got to be willing to stand and fight in our churches as well to keep our loved ones safe against the evil, against what's going on in this world. Be willing to fight. And we see so very little of that. So very little. The people are willing to stand up in any capacity, spiritually, physically, whatever it is. You just kind of go along and we don't want to fight. We don't want to mess. We don't want to have to worry about it. Being a man sometimes means you have to get your hands dirty. You have to stand up and fight. You have to be willing. You have to be willing to do what is necessary. Always restrained, of course, by that love that He has given us. And then, lastly tonight, to be a man, not only do you need to be a leader, a provider, a lover, and a fighter, but you also need to be a forgiver. So oftentimes, as men, we have to ask, be the one to asking for forgiveness. And that's manly too. It's not beneath us to ask our wives, our children, if needed, to forgive us for how we failed and what we've done wrong. But we ourselves must also be a forgiver. There will be times when we're wrong. Matthew 18, Peter asks, how many times should I forgive my brother? Seven? Christ answers him, no, forgive him way many more times than that. To be a man, we must be a forgiver. We must be willing to show grace to our family, to our husbands, to our wives, to our wives. We need to be willing to forgive when they trespass against us. When our children do the stupid things that we know they're going to do, we have to be willing to forgive, teach, move on, not let it hang over their head for the rest of their lives. We need to be willing to forgive each other and be an example of Christ to others, treating them gently and kindly with compassion. Being a man means being a mixture, a balance of all these things we've talked about tonight. We need to carry through or discharge and perform our duty of being a man. Commit to battling the blurring of the sexes. It gets so frustrating when you thought that the worst thing in the world could be that they would make it legal for women to marry women and men to marry men. Now, it's even worse. If it could ever have been so, we wouldn't have believed it, but it is. And we may never change the course of the world. We may never have an impact all the way up to the White House or to the entirety of our nation, but let us have an impact on those that are right here, right now in our lives. Let us be an example of what it means to be a man and lead, so that no one could ever accuse us of being effeminate or wondering, you know, exactly who we are or what we're about. Let it not be that. Let us raise children that will go out into the world confidently, knowing that God has made them into a man and what to do about it, what to do with that gift that God has given them and that position that God has placed them in. And that will be a great blessing for them in life. So on this Father's Day, take this example for these thoughts of what it means to be a man, and thank God for all the godly men that you know. For your husbands, for your sons, for your uncles, for your grandfathers, for all those in your life that you just may have an acquaintance with that you know are godly men. Be thankful today for them, because we are, or they are, a dying breed. We need to do everything that we can to be an example of what it means to be a man today, so much that will help our society in so many ways. Let's stand.